This is a CBC podcast. Discover the CBC programs of yesteryear, like Man Alive and Life and Times, with the CBC Digital Archives. Watch, hear, and collect your favorite clips at cbc.ca/archives.
I'm Sukyin.
Hi.
What's your name?
Alia.
Alia, so would you do my job for me today?
What's your job?
Well, usually I bother strangers with a question and try to get them to share stuff that's happening in their life.
Okay.
Your game?
No. I'm actually visiting from out of town, and this is my last day in Toronto, and so I was going to just do the wander thing.
I'll tell you a little bit about the job. Walk up to people you don't know, and the question that I want you to ask them, because this whole episode is on meeting strangers, is what was the last meaningful exchange you had with a stranger?
I'm hesitant, but I will accept your challenge.
Nicely done! And you're a stranger. Why did you accept this?
I don't know. I listen to, like, my arm hairs, and they're not upright from you. You seem like a relatively nice stranger.
You're in for this. Cool. Let's go. So what do you think?
That guy on the bike, if he's not in a rush, might be a good stranger to hit up. Hey, guys. Question that we're dealing with for this episode is, what was the last meaningful encounter you had with a stranger?
I don't know. I helped a lady. She dropped her violin. She was walking with all of her luggage, and that was like my good deed
That's
for the day.
An awesome encounter. People with luggage issues are, in my opinion, some of the most vulnerable strangers out there. So good on you. What about you?
There's this guy the other day on the corner there, and he was like vomiting blood, and his shirt was ripped open. So I went and bought him a blanket. I felt like something passed between us, even though I don't think he knew I gave him the blanket.
Basically, the take-home from this conversation is that the most meaningful encounters with strangers are when there is a vulnerable stranger in your vicinity.
Vulnerability.
Yeah, wow. I've had meaningful encounters where strangers have helped me, so everybody's vulnerable at any given time. That's the whole thing. It's just good karma for the rest of your day.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. You've given us really good fodder for thought. I hope this has been a meaningful stranger encounter.
Yeah, I feel vulnerable.
I feel a little vulnerable, too, but have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay. Holy sheesh! You were a natch. I love that. Okay, so who's next, Alia? Who do you think?
That guy. Excuse me. We're wondering if you would tell us about a very meaningful encounter you've had with a stranger.
The first thing that pops into my mind was I was on Roncesvalles Street a couple of weeks ago. I found this really cool picture of a vase with daffodils in it. This really old Polish woman walked up behind me, and she goes, "How much you want?" And I go, $3. She's like, "Deal." We exchanged the money. She said, "Have a very good day, sir." And for some reason, that just stuck in my mind. It's like she was letting go of something sentimental to her, and I guess she felt like I was going to a good home or something. So it's this genuine experience exchange with a stranger. I just moved to Toronto. I've met so many people in the last few months.
Where did you move from?
I'm from Vancouver originally.
Shut up. I'm visiting from Vancouver.
Well, I grew up in East Vancouver.
I'm from, like, Fraser and Broadway area.
That was my hood, too.
What?
On St. Catharines.
I'm at Windsor and 8th.
You're from Deep Cove, aren't you?
Lynn Valley.
Lynn Valley. I know someone who's from Deep Cove, and he said he used to be your neighbor.
That is hilarious.
I went to grad school with him in Ottawa.
I went to grad school, too. And we both have glasses.
Do you guys feel like you're less strangers now?
Yeah, we're like hood.
6 degrees of separation, all strangers know each other by accident.
Case in point, the three of us.
Nice to meet y'all, and I'm sure I'll bump into you guys again soon sometime.
Yeah, maybe
don't be a stranger.
Right.
Okay, who rocks? You really got a touch with strangers.
Hey. This was a really good use of like the last 20 minutes of my time, because, I mean, as I mentioned when you found me, I'm literally just wandering around by myself today.
Oh boy, I am so glad I stumbled into Alia. My spidey senses were tingling when I saw her ambling down the sidewalk. I knew I had to talk to her, and she turned out to be the perfect stranger to do my job perfectly. And no, she doesn't work in the media. Alia is actually a biochemist by trade. It just goes to show, you never know what will happen when you open yourself up to someone you don't know. Today on the DNTO podcast, we ask, when is a perfect stranger strangely perfect? Well, you know, it's one thing to engage with a stranger, but marry them? We'll hear from a woman who met her groom for the first time on their wedding day. Plus, what compels a fella to follow strangers around the airport and pretend they're spies? Well, we have the surprising benefits of following people you don't know. And what would you do if you received an email from a total stranger inviting himself over for dinner? We'll find out how one woman responded. This is DNTO, where strangers collide.
Hi, this is Neil Pasricha, author of The Book of Awesome, and you are listening to the DNTO episode about perfect strangers. And you know, one thing I think that's awesome is when you sneeze and a stranger says bless you. You don't know them, they don't know you, you'll probably never see them again. But they sort of reached out there and said, I heard you sneeze, man, and I'm with you on this one. That's awesome.
Hi, my name's Alex Friedman from Winnipeg, and here's my story about how strangers can entertain me for hours at the airport. When I was a young kid, my father and I used to listen to a George Carlin album. And George Carlin, at one point, did this funny little spoof commercial where he's talking about, there's always a spy in the airport. It's your job to find him. And we took it seriously. So you get to the airport and you start looking around and there's always somebody who looks suspicious. Be it the hat they're wearing. Maybe they're carrying an attaché case that looks a little strange. Maybe they're doing their crossword in a particularly unique fashion. Maybe, who knows what, there's something that jumps out at you. So you got to follow them around the airport. You got to figure out what they're doing. And most importantly, for so many valid reasons, you don't want to get caught doing this. But this has taken over 4 and 5 hour layovers. This has entertained me for hours and hours and hours. It's the chase. That's what's so exciting. It's the observation of the people. It's the creation of the story inside your head. I'm a person who's curious about people, a person who finds people in general to be extremely interesting and absolutely worth figuring out more about. So I think that my desire to be an investigator and a journalist and somebody who spends their time digging up and actually going a few steps further and actually figuring out who they are is where this comes from.
That is journalist Alex Friedman on some of the benefits of following strangers. DNTO producer Tori Allen also thinks that it's a very good idea to follow a stranger once in a while. Now, Tori, is that because that's something you do?
I do it occasionally, often when I'm on vacation. For example, I was in New York City this spring, a great people-watching location, and I had a few hours to kill, so I started following a guy and a girl, and which wasn't really inherently very interesting. They didn't do anything totally wacky, but the best part of it was when I got bored of following them and I was hungry, I found myself in front of a great oyster restaurant, which I would have never found if I hadn't been following them that day.
Another benefit.
Yes, but there are actually much bigger benefits to following someone you don't know. One of them is creative inspiration. Artists have been onto this for a long, long time. Take, for example, the French artist Sophie Kell. I think you know her, don't you?
Yeah, she's really awesome. Sophie Kell has so much work about following strangers and imparting the process of becoming obsessed with somebody she doesn't know, and that becomes part of her artwork.
Totally, and it actually kickstarted her whole career because she came back to Paris, her hometown, after she'd been traveling all over the place for 7 years. She didn't know what she wanted to do. She was lost. And so to get over that, she just started following people. And then she decided to get a little bit more serious about it. And she started taking photos of these strangers. And then she decided to stick with one guy for a few weeks. Here's a clip from YouTube.
I followed a man in the street of Paris, and I lost him a few minutes later. And in that same evening, I met him again in a party. So I thought it was a sign just to stay with him. I understood he was going to Italy, to Venice, the next week. And I just decided to join him there. So I went to Venice, I found him, and I followed him for a few weeks.
A few weeks.
Okay. That's bordering on stalking.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme. It's extreme. So there's Sophie in this blonde wig. She has brown hair. She's following this man whom she just names Henri Bay, and he, you know, follows him for 13 days, taking photos, making diary entries, like a spy almost. But those entries and those photos become this book called Suite Vénitienne, which becomes her first major artwork, and it travels around the world to galleries. And as you said, she continued doing work.
Well, she's an art star now.
Yes. So like Alex, she really built, but she took it almost a step further about creating this story in her head about who this person was and her own experience of following this complete stranger. But you know what, Sakin, you don't have to be that creepy. I mean, that's kind of creepy, right? To follow somebody around for a couple of weeks. There's a much easier way to do this. You are on Twitter, right?
I am indeed.
Do you follow anyone that you don't know at all? You don't know anything about them. They're not a public persona.
Okay. No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I want you to try something with me. I'm a little bit addicted to this new application called Stwanger.com. I don't have a Lisp. That's Stwanger, Stwanger.com. And it taps into your Twitter feed and it just presents random strangers to you who have, they all have public profiles. So they're all up there publicly and they all tweet regularly. The stranger, the better. So do you want to try it with me right now?
Sure. Okay. You've set me up here. I'm going to do this.
You're logged in through your Twitter account and there's a link here that says find a stranger. So click on that.
Okay. Here goes.
All right, we're waiting. It's generating a stranger. And who did we get?
Okay, so this is brought me to Oscar R's Twitter. He's a nice-looking fellow carrying his daughter. His bio says, Christ follower, father, husband, musician, producer. That is who I am, Oscar R. Some of his tweets, let's see, it says, according to Luke 5:31, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And then he says, just Skype with my parents for the first time since I've been to Austin. So cool to see their reaction. I am so stoked to be watching Conan right now. Coco is back. So a little bit of, you know, Bible stuff,
there.
A little television.
A little bit of everything.
Very interesting. I feel like I'm snooping.
You are snooping a little bit, but you're getting a mainline into Oscar R's brain, right? And here's the thing. Most people follow and surround themselves with people who are like them. Mm-hmm. It's called the self-similarity principle. You know, we like to surround ourselves with people who have the same ideas, the same values, who like to do the same kinds of things. And that's just human nature. But according to scientist and author Jonah Lehrer, that can be a little bit dangerous.
I think this leads over time to the trap of certainty, where we're absolutely certain that what we believe is right. And that leads us often to be very, very wrong. And I think the internet at its worst absolutely fuels that. I think it allows you to curate your news sources, curate your information, so you never, ever have to hear about all the reasons you might be wrong. And that in part is why I found this notion of following Twitter strangers so interesting, because I think this is one very easy way. And very painless way, because it's often fun and quite funny to follow someone who thinks nothing like you on Twitter.
Very true. I mean, I'm interested in this Oscar R because his life is so different from mine.
Yes, and just beyond that, just being exposed to a wider cross-section of people like Oscar R, even if it's just only on Twitter, could improve not just your creativity, but also your bottom line. Here's Jonah again. He's citing a study done by a sociologist at Princeton University, Martin Rueff. And Rueff followed over 700 graduates of a business school who went on to become entrepreneurs. And he wanted to look at how their social networks connected to how successful and innovative their businesses were. And for most of them, predictably, their social networks were pretty narrow. They associated with people who were like them. But
there were a few entrepreneurs who had very diverse social networks. They hung out with liberals and conservatives. They hung out with electrical engineers. And when the sociologist looked at people with lots and lots of different people in their social network, that they were three times more successful as entrepreneurs.
So mixing your company up with complete strangers can actually lead you to flourish.
Yes. Following, not stalking, a stranger can be good for your imagination. It can help you discover new places. It can be a source of creative inspiration, like what's just happening to you right here. It can also lead you out of that certainty trap and help you potentially become more successful. So, Sukin, I say embrace the stranger, but just don't do that literally.
Well, thank you very much for introducing me to this interesting stranger application.
I think you're a little bit addicted now.
It's totally opened this whole other world here.
A whole other world of strangers waiting to be followed.
Thank you, Tori.
Welcome.
That is Tori Allen seeking out strangers in her life.
Now, what about you? Have you ever followed a stranger online or in person? Tell us where your stranger took you. The DNTO hotline is waiting. 1-866-620-3686. You can also email your stories with strangers to dnto@cbc.ca. For those curious, the website is stranger.com. And if you want to hear more about following strangers on Twitter, our friends at Spark have a full interview with Jonah and others online. Check cbc.ca/DNTO for a link to that. Now, some people discover after years of marriage that they're married to a total stranger. Who are you? Well, Hannah Miller knew that her husband was a complete stranger on her wedding day. And that was the whole point.
I saw an advertisement in our local weekly paper from a man named Brian Feldman. He said he was looking to marry any woman that showed up to the downtown Orlando courthouse, all in an effort to show, you know, two people, as long as they're opposite genders, can come together and get married, even if they've never set eyes on each other before. But a same-sex couple, like my friends Nikki and Rachel, who had been together for 7 years, were turned down. And I loved that, you know, this man was calling the world on that absurdity. And I wanted to be a part of that. So I drove downtown and I parked on the street and I went into the courthouse. There were three women that showed up on time and several others that kind of trickled in. Brian arrived. He took us all to an Aquafina water machine and he purchased a $1.50 bottle of Aquafina water. And he determined that we would play spin the bottle. So we all got in a semicircle to play spin the bottle. And Brian, in the most American way possible, twisted that bottle and chose his mate. And it was me. And there was a moment where my heart kind of sunk in my chest as I realized that this was really going to happen, that I was really going to marry this strange man. Florida, there is a 3-day waiting time before you can actually have a ceremony. So we filled out our paperwork, kind of looked at each other and went our separate ways. 3 days later was, of course, my wedding day. And I had gone to a thrift store and found an old vintage cotillion gown and altered it into a wedding dress for myself, built a veil and made myself a lovely little rainbow bouquet, and taken all the joy I think that most brides take prior to their wedding day. But on my wedding day itself, it was raining and it was gray, and I felt that way about the whole situation when I woke up. When I got to the courthouse, there were a few people waiting for me out front. And as I ran up the steps, a strange man asked me, you know, who's the lucky guy? Woo-woo! And I answered him honestly. I said, I have no idea. Everyone crowded into the tiny little room where they hold the ceremony. And there was this sad little wicker arch with some fake flowers hanging over it. And Brian and I were directed to stand underneath it. At that moment, it was very real and it was very scary. I was making a very real and legal commitment to a complete stranger. And as much as ideologically, I thought what I was doing was right, you know, it was still scary. It was still strange. And it was still my wedding. So there was kind of a loneliness to it. And we went through the ceremony and, you know, I fiddled with my veil and Brian was taking iPhone pictures of the crowd while the officiant was reading the ceremony. And when she asked Brian if he would take this woman to be his wife, He waited almost a full minute before he said, I do. And when she asked me, all I could squeeze out was okay. And after we put our rings on each other's fingers, you know, we shook hands. And it was the first time, I think, that we had touched each other. After the interviews, we exchanged phone numbers, and then we went our separate ways. And I spent my wedding night alone with my convictions. I feel that I did the right thing. I feel that I would do it again. I do feel sad that when I marry, it will be my second marriage. But I feel like I married for love, just not my own.
Hannah Miller is not quite happily married in Orlando, Florida. And for those of you curious, I sure am myself, you can take a look at Hannah and Brian's wedding video. We've posted a link on our website, cbc.ca/DNTO. This is DNTO, the podcast that thinks a stranger is just a friend you haven't met yet. Inner work, author, filmmaker, and musician Cecil Castellucci often illuminates the plus side of interacting with strangers. Her new novel, Rose Sees Red, is a story about two strangers who live next door to one another, Irena, a Soviet girl, and Rose, an American. And one night, Irena climbs into Rose's window, saying that she wants to experience an American night on the town. Cecil, how does Irena, the stranger next door, affect the main character, Rose?
Well, Rose in the book is, she sort of had a very, very bad friendship with a girl for, you know, elementary and junior high school. And so she's completely shut down. And one of the big things in the book is that when Irena climbs into her window, all of a sudden she does everything differently. Like, she goes to this huge party on the steps of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and she starts talking to the boy in her dance class, and she starts, like, you know, having some vodka, and she, you know, she just sort of goes crazy. And she's even wearing, like, her pajamas. So it's like every single thing about the situation is different, and she does everything differently.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that there are parts of ourselves that blossom with a stranger that don't blossom with people that we know. And that's not to say that people that we know are terrible or bad or you can't be yourself with them. It's just that obviously we're all different with different people. I'm different with my mom than I am with my best friend, than I am with my lover, than I am with a stranger. And I think that they can sort of see you in a different way. They can encourage you to try new things.
Why do you think that is? I mean, if we are being an almost truer sense of ourselves, why do you think we tend to repress that in the company of those we know? And why is it easier to unleash that part of ourselves with a stranger?
My suspicion is that with people that we know, we have responsibilities towards their feelings, and we've sort of set roles and stuff. But with a stranger, There's none of that. Like, when you go into a bathroom and you see someone wearing a nice dress and you don't know them at all, you've got no stake in saying to them, like, wow, that's a great dress. You look beautiful. You know, it's like, you don't know that person, but I bet you that person feels awesome. Because when you have your friend say, oh yeah, that dress looks great on you, it's like, well, okay, but they're supposed to say that. They don't want to hurt my feelings because I look kind of too curvy in this dress, or my boobs are hanging out, or whatever. Mm-hmm. If a stranger says it, it's different.
Right. Sometimes we come to questioning what our friends are saying. And yet from a stranger, it's like, oh, thanks for the compliment.
Yeah, or exactly. Or you can take it in. You're going to be like, you're right. I do look good in this dress, you know, and it feels more real. It feels more true because it's not like your mom or your dad or your friend, you know.
Very true. Well, what about you? I mean, in your personal life, when have you seen the power of an interaction with a stranger?
Well, actually, last week I was having trouble with an acquaintance who believed that we were very, very close friends, and we weren't. And I was really stressing out about it. And I was at the farmer's market, and I met this girl there, you know, friend's girlfriend. She was telling me all about how this girl said that you guys were like best friends. And I was like, oh, I'm not her best friend. And she's freaking me out because it's like she's saying these things, and she dyed her hair purple like me. And it was just really frustrating. And then that girl left, and this stranger sitting across from me was like, you got to have a talk with that girl, and just started giving me advice about this acquaintance of mine. And it was great to have this conversation with this woman while eating my pupusa at the farmer's market, because it was like I could ask her all these questions about, well, do you think this is weird, or am I being crazy, or whatever. And she doesn't even know my name, but she gave me the best advice in the world. And then I went home and I took that advice and I dealt with the problem, and I was able to deal with the problem because I was able to be honest in a way that I couldn't be with the people in my real life.
Who do you think you actually felt closer to? This stranger who gave you wise advice at the farmer's market, or this supposed friend who says you guys are really close?
The stranger at the farmer's market. It was a truer and more organic connection with this person at the farmer's market, who I've never hung out with. I don't know her name. I'll probably never see her again. And, you know, but she was super helpful.
So what do you say to people, you know, who are unlike you, who are shy or wary of strangers?
Oh, I would say that because I, even though I'm an open person, I still have my, you know, my limits. But sometimes I try to stretch that out just a little bit. And so I would say maybe just try to be a little bit more open than you normally would be. Train rides are great for that.
Oh, that's interesting. So like, how so?
I think on a train, it's like this romantic place, you know, and you're in this sort of bubble. And I think that, like, if you go to the dining car and they sit you family style and you just sit with strangers and you have dinner with them, there's nothing better than, like, sitting with strangers and eating dinner on a train as, like, the land is passing you by.
That's a safe place to do it, just to get your toes wet? Because why?
I think because you're in between space. You're not here and you're not there. You're in movement. You're in transit. And I think that it's one of those situations again where you're gonna step off the train and you're probably never gonna see that person again. But you can have a really nice conversation, and there's a sense of adventure because you're in movement. I bet you ocean liners in the old days were the same way.
So what do you think is the reward of putting yourself out there to a stranger?
Well, I think when you put yourself out there to a stranger, you can A, have a fantastic connection with someone. B, I don't know, find out about where a cool cafe is, like if you're traveling or something, you know, like or have like an exciting adventure. Once I was on jury duty and I just like talked to the woman next to me, and then she was like, oh, you like the theater? I've got an extra ticket to a play tonight. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, yes, I do. And that was amazing. And it wouldn't have been if I hadn't just like started talking to her because we were both bored out of our minds at jury duty, you know? So I think that the reward is that sometimes you can have these sort of glorious little adventures that sort of take you out of your normal routine, but are totally you, 100%. I mean, of course, you know, be aware of strangers too. But I think that, you know, if you approach it with a good sense, that you can really have some fantastic experiences.
Right. You're not advocating taking candy from strangers here.
Exactly.
But you're saying, hey,
I'm saying,
you might get exactly a theater ticket.
I'm saying be aware of sociopaths, but there are a lot of people on the planet that are not that.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, Cecil, on the social dynamics of letting in, keeping out strangers.
Thank you so much.
That is Cecil Castellucci. Her newest book is called Rose Sees Red, and you can win a copy. All you have to do is go to our Facebook page and tell us about a recent encounter with a stranger. We're on Facebook under DNTO.
Hi, this is Neil Pasricha, author of The Book of Awesome. And one thing that's awesome about strangers is when they laugh at a joke that you were telling between you and your friends. So it's sort of like your private one-liner is granted objective joke-telling credibility. You know, you're in a bank line, you're just between a bunch of old guys at the urinals, and suddenly this little whisper joke you said gets everyone going, and I think that it's a beautiful thing, and I think it's awesome.
Now I'm going to tell you about another stranger. His name is Mark Scholdeis, and he had to come up with an eco-friendly gift last Christmas for his partner, Hillary. But, you know, time was starting to run out, and that is when he happened to stumble upon artist and storyteller Frankie James's website. And Mark was so intrigued with how Frankie had ripped out her driveway and planted a garden in its place that he decided to send her an email.
Hi, Frankie. You don't know me. I want to tell you about three things that happened in the last 27 minutes. In the midst of looking for gift ideas for my family's annual secret Christmas draw, I found your website. Your driveway, or lack of one, and your visual essays inspired me. I decided that both me and the person I drew would really get a kick out of talking to you. Here is what I propose. I give an evening in January where the two of us join you at your place for dinner. Now, I realize how absurd and presumptuous it is that I am proposing to give your company as a gift for Christmas. As a token of my appreciation for your time, cost of the food, I'd make a donation of $200 to an organization of your choice. We often talk about how some of our best conversations are with strangers. Hoping you'll consider my proposal, I am anxious to hear your thoughts. All good things. Mark Scholdeis. So this was a really funny letter. I had to read it. I just could not believe it at first. I thought it must be a joke when I got it. This guy is inviting himself over to our house to dinner, and he expects me to cook for him. I can't believe it. Who is this guy?
Hi, my name is Mark Scholdeis, and I am a grade 4-5 teacher.
You know, the worst you're going to get out of it is an awkward night or be viewed as being extremely rude for inviting yourself over. Or you're just going to get ignored. And I was okay with those three things happening.
But the thing that really hooked me was that he said that he was going to make a donation to the charity of my choice, $200. And somehow I connected that with an ad that I'd recently read for the Yonge Street Mission. And so I did the math and I figured, okay, well, $200 donation from this guy, Mark Scholdeis, is going to allow 77 people to have Christmas dinner. And somehow that really got into my mind. And I thought, all right, I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to see if he checks out. So I Googled him and I found enough information about him that I thought, I think he's a good guy.
So we're standing there on the doorstep and about to ring the doorbell. And I think we brought two bottles of wine. We figured that'd be a good social lubricant if we needed it.
So the doorbell rings and my husband Bill opens the door and I see Mark and Hillary there on the doorstep.
A nice waft of dinner comes through the door as Bill's cooking away and Frankie's there. And I think we had a hug and a giggle and laughed about the whole situation. And then it just became a great evening.
And I immediately knew that they were really solid people. And I thought, this is going to be fun.
Dinner was amazing. Bill is an incredible cook. So it was a first-class dinner, both the food and the conversation. After dinner, we stayed for a while and had conversation. And we were very conscious that we didn't want to stay too long and overstay our welcome. And we left that night and we felt like we had two new friends.
I think we closed the door and we both thought, well, that was good. That was fun.
Two couples having dinner together and connecting. And, you know, I after the evening with Frankie and Bill, I felt a lot closer to them than, you know, scrolling through, you know, 60 of someone's wedding photos on Facebook. And that's something that we're maybe losing track of a bit now.
I think that it says something about trust and openness and that you're not going to be in danger if you open yourself up to situations like this. You know, we can just change our lives by who we decide that we want to meet. You can just reach out and introduce yourself to almost anybody in the world.
This is Neil Pasricha, author of The Book of Awesome. You know how it is. You're cuddling up with your snuggle puss in front of Niagara Falls or at a park, and you guys think it's a perfect, you know, Kodak moment. you try that awkward thing where you stick your arm way up in the air and try to point it down at you, and you squeeze your cheeks together and you try to get like your two faces stuck in the frame. And then there's this moment where you check the camera and you got your forehead or you got her chin or you missed an ear and there's a bit of an arm sticking out, and it's so hard. And you sort of think, well, I guess we're never going to get the perfect picture of us. And that's what makes it so great. When a stranger walks by and just randomly offers to just stop and be like, hey, can I help you out there? And when they do that, when that stranger offers you a picture, it's a beautiful moment. And the funniest part of the moment is when you teach them how to use your camera. It usually goes like this. Press this button. Sort of like every other camera. When a stranger comes by and offers to take a picture of you and the person you love, that is a very awesome moment.
It can happen anywhere. On the street, in a cafe, even while riding an escalator. Someone you've never seen before catches your eye, and all of a sudden you're sharing a moment with them. Now, if you're quick and confident, you can capitalize on that connection by actually engaging with that stranger. But if you miss your opportunity, you can always place a missed connection ad in your local paper and see what happens. Video journalist Katie Newton spent some time meeting people behind these posts for her series, I See You. And she's here to talk to us about the power of a missed connection. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Nice to meet you, stranger.
Yeah.
Hey, so what originally interested you in, you know, people's missed connections?
Well, at the time, I was in L.A. I'm a video journalist for the Los Angeles Times, and I was having dinner with a girlfriend of mine who actually I grew up with in Canada, and she was working in LA, and she was at the point, she had a really good career, and she was at that point where she was, you know, trying to track down her mate. It was often a talk of a lot of our dinners, and she had seen this guy at a grocery store in LA called Trader Joe's, and she was pretty sure that he was the one because of the way he was picking out his vegetables. And we were all talking about it. And one of the other women at the table was like, you know, you should play some Miss Connections. And we were both like, what is Miss Connections? And, you know, heard that it was this place where people post descriptions of meetings with strangers. And I read it and I completely fell in love with it. The descriptions are just amazing. Just the detail that people go into and the way they tell a story is pretty awesome. Like, you know, they do a build up and then there's this moment and then you kind of are wondering, like, what's going to happen? And even the way the stories are written, in the end, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, is someone going to respond? Are they not going to respond? Are they going to find this person?
Yeah, you know, that's so cool, being able to read it like a narrative. It's like a page turner.
Yeah.
So what happens, do you think, that, you know, compels them to go the next level to write a missed connection in their paper?
I think it's more about them. It's not really a message to the other person. I think it's a detailed message to themselves. It's a detailed message saying, this is what I want, and this is why I want it, and I'm ready for it, you know? And, like, reassuring themselves that next time they can make that happen. You know, I was reading through these missed connections every morning, right? At one point, I thought there was one to me. In the missed connection, it described someone who was filming on Sunset Boulevard who had black hair. And I was like, oh, it's me. It was kind of cool. Like, I'm married. I'm happily married. My husband knew that I was reading this missed connection and thinking it was me. But on some level, it was really flattering. It was like, oh, did someone see me? So I replied to the missed connection. And the worst part was the person was really nice. They wrote back and they said, no, that wasn't you. You know, it was sort of humiliating in a way. It was like, when you're walking along the street and you think someone's waving at you and you wave back really, like, you know, with a lot of energy, but then you realize, no, they're not waving at me. They're waving at someone behind me. And that's almost like sort of lonely in a weird way. So I guess I like kind of the long answer to your question, but I guess maybe I imagine what those people are feeling is that in a fast-paced world, for one second, maybe someone saw you in a crowd. And maybe the fact that you're saying, you know, I saw you too, you stood out, you're special. Maybe that's what people are trying to express on Misconnections.
That's pretty strong. I mean, just a small affirmation that I see you. Well,
yeah.
We're going to take a look at one of your videos. This is a particular woman that you met named Charlotte. Can you tell us about her misconnection?
So Charlotte had written a misconnection about a guy that she'd seen in a bakery in L.A., and she'd written this misconnection. I thought it was really cute. So I met Charlotte at the bakery. We always shot in the same location that the misconnections happened. And while we were shooting, in the middle of shooting, the bakery owner comes out and asks, you know, what we're doing. And Charlotte describes, you know, that she met this guy. And the bakery owner says, oh, I know him. I'll call him. And I kept rolling, and here's the clip where Charlotte realizes she might be meeting the guy.
You know, I really thought it was this fleeting thing. It's LA, it's huge, I'll never see him again. Really, it's the unfulfilled hope, you know, like that you would have something in common, that you would be kindred spirits. So it's really, I think misconnections are all about the idealized version of what you're seeking. So I can never come here again, because now the owner of the Cecina Bakery knows that I'm hot for her cell phone buddy.
Interesting. So the woman sees the guy she's hot for, has an actual opportunity to speak with him, but she doesn't want to go there. Why do you think Charlotte didn't want to meet her misconnection?
I think Charlotte kind of speaks to it. It's the idea that that person is out there is really reassuring. And if that idea isn't real, and if it was just your imagination, man, you know. But now if she talks to him, what if he didn't even acknowledge her? What if he didn't even see her, you know?
Yeah, then it gets scary, because then you got to be vulnerable.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It was great.
That's video journalist Katie Newton. She's currently living in New York City, and you can find a link to her ICU videos on our website. We've posted them at cbc.ca/DNTO. Oh, yes. As you can see, it can be incredibly intoxicating and exhilarating in that moment when you connect with a stranger. So you might want to seize the opportunity and get to know that person. I did that once. So what happened was, years ago, I was listening to Brave New Waves on CBC Radio, and I heard the most incredible music by a solo musician who had just this way with sound. The most incredible compositions that dovetailed from one mood to another mood on a dime. Very playful, so many instruments and sounds. Through his music, I actually fell in love with him. And it was during a time when I was living in an illegal warehouse in Vancouver. I basically had to hide the fact that I was in there, which meant that I was staying indoors all day and night, listening to his record on constant rotation. So in the city, a friend of mine ended up volunteering at a music festival, and he just so happened to be driving that particular musician to the airport, and he ends up telling him that he has this friend, me, who is addicted to his album. So the musician gives my friend his address for me to write him. And so began a long, lurid letter-writing romance whirlwind with this stranger. And this was becoming so obsessive and intense. At the apex, I was writing like him 2 or 3 times a day. And then finally, we just couldn't take it anymore. And the musician bought me a plane ticket to go visit him in his home city. I was so excited. When we met, the darndest thing happened. I was a complete nervous wreck. He looked exactly like he did on that magazine cover where he looked so cute. I couldn't speak. I was so intimidated that I was unable to express myself. And the second day we were hanging out together, I still couldn't speak. And then I started to break out in hives all over my body, and my face got covered in itchy welts. I think he found me kind of annoying, especially that time when I didn't close the bathroom door. He was appalled. The long and the short is, when we finally met face to face, we were completely incompatible. I was impossibly unable to talk to him, and all he did was spend the day watching TV, flipping through the channels, which ironically is where the mercurial quality of his music I so loved came from. By the end of my trip, when I was just about to leave to go to the airport, he asked me if I wanted to move to the city, and I said no. And he agreed that, yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. Our romance was cooked. However, in real life, we did end up becoming much better friends than lovers.
Hi, this is Neil Pasricha, author of The Book of Awesome. And one thing I think that's awesome is when a perfect stranger high-beams you when you're driving home down a dark country road to warn you about the cop sitting on the side up ahead. You are listening to the Perfect Stranger edition of DNTO, and that is an awesome thing.
Beep, 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 beep. SOS is from strangers. Now, like Blanche DuBois, stand-up comedian Niall Séguin has always depended on the kindness of strangers, especially on the Fringe Theater festival circuit, where Niall has often stayed with volunteer billets, total strangers who open their homes to touring performers. But during one stay in Winnipeg, Niall had to ask the question, how much does he owe these strangers in return for their kindness?
So I arrive at my billet's house a few hours before showtime, right? And we're hanging out and we're chatting. And she's awesome. She is super friendly and happy-go-lucky. And then her roommate comes in. And, you know, we're like, hey, what's going on? And she seems a little frazzled. And so she explains that she lost her cell phone. She lost her cell phone and then she called it. And some dude picked it up. And she was like, oh, great, you found my cell phone. Can I have it back? He's like, yeah, you can have it back for $50. So my first thought, and I suggest this, I was like, why don't, let's just call the cops, right? Let's just call the cops and have them meet you guys there or whatever. And so she's like, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to go meet this guy. So it's her and her friend, and they're getting ready to go. And I'm like, should I go, right? Because here's the thing, I'm crashing there. And even though I am a stranger, I mean, I was even more of a stranger when they agreed to put me up, right? Like, they literally had never met me. So I felt a little obliged to help them out, I guess. So at this point, I'm thinking, oh boy, this is going to be one of those stories where like, oh, did you hear about Niall? Well, what happened? He died in Winnipeg, like trying to fight some guy for a cell phone, right? Because that's where my mind goes, because I'm neurotic. And I decide not to go. I decide not to go because it's like a few hours before showtime, and I don't think going out and fighting someone is going to help, you know, get me focused or anything. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm just gonna go to my show. Just gonna go to my show, guys. So I go and I do the show, and then I come back to my billet's place and I find out what happened. What happened is she and her friend went to go see this dude, met him like on a street corner somewhere or whatever, and he limps up to them because he's got like a crutch. He's limping on a crutch, and they're like, can I get the phone back? So he gives her the phone, and then he's like, okay, can I get my $50? She's like, I'm not giving you $50. And she leaves with her friend on the way to the car, and this guy like hobbles after them, and then he slams his crutch into the back like window of her car and like spiders it. He's like losing his mind, and then is when suddenly the cops decide to show up. I don't know, they were in the neighborhood, and so he ended up going probably to prison for $50 that he didn't even get, which was probably one of the worst crimes I've ever heard of in my life. So I'm listening to all this and I'm thinking, I should have gone, right? Which makes no sense. It makes no sense at all, because if I'd gone, what was I wasn't gonna take a crutch for this person that I'd never met. I don't think there's anything I could have done, but I still feel guilty because they were total strangers and they were putting me up, and I just feel like I should have reciprocated. So apparently, if you want me to fight someone, all you got to do is put me up at your place for a few weeks and then I'm good to go. I'm ready to go.
That is Niall. I'm a lover, not a fighter, Séguin. He lives in Toronto with his enormous guilty conscience. No, I don't know. I mean, I think Niall might have made the right call. I mean, you go there, stand between those two, and then what, get a crutch in your eye? No thanks. But you know what? I would like to hear from you, dear DNTL listener. What was the most unusual thing you've ever done to help out a stranger? And how did it work out for you? Call the Kindness of Strangers hotline, 1-866-630-3686, or email your stories to dnto at cbc.ca.
You're listening to the DNTO podcast, free to download every Saturday. But you probably already knew that since you just downloaded it. Carry on.
Now, the odds are, at some point, you've given money to a charity. Recent stats say that about 85% of Canadians do just that. But the thing is, you probably never know exactly who that donation benefits. You're basically giving your money to a stranger. But for Hilda Back, a Swedish woman, that stranger was Chris Mburu. When Hilda made her donation to an education fund for Kenyan children, Chris was a young boy struggling to get an education in rural Kenya. But Chris and Hilda didn't stay strangers forever. Here's Chris.
Well, I was growing up in rural Kenya as a small boy in a poor family. And at times, my family could not afford to pay for me to go to school because we had to pay for school fees to attend school. And then this woman from Sweden named Hilda Back came out of nowhere and decided that she was going to be supporting my school fees. And because of that, I was able to stay in school, which was not a given in the situation that I was in. A lot of kids dropped out of school because of lack of school fees. And when they drop out of school, they lead miserable lives. They're not able to get jobs. They're not able to participate in the economic life of the country. And this has happened far too often. It was quite a special feeling because, you know, you can imagine I'm growing up in this village. I'd never seen many foreigners, let alone a Swedish woman who was interested in funding my education. So it was a great feeling. I felt very special. I felt very empowered, and clearly she had changed my life.
Chris isn't exaggerating when he says that. Hilda, the Swedish woman he had never met, continued to sponsor Chris through his secondary schooling, and for him that meant he was able to go to university in Nairobi, and later, thanks to a Fulbright scholarship, to Harvard Law School. And even though Chris had never responded to the letters Hilda had written him, because he was embarrassed by his then imperfect English, he was always curious about his mysterious benefactor.
I always ask myself, you know, who was this person who had stepped into my life, and, you know, why did it happen to me and not to the others, and, you know, what did it mean? This kept popping up in my mind, and my life started shaping up. I went to America, and then I got a job with the United Nations, and over the time, I was telling myself, I just have to find this person who made all this possible. Well, I started looking for her, and it wasn't a very easy process because, you know, I didn't know where to start. I had an old address, and I wrote to the address, and the letters weren't responded to. And, you know, I would ask people from Sweden if they knew her, and finally I contacted the Swedish embassy in Nairobi and told them the story, and I said I was looking for this woman, because by that time I had decided that whether or not I found her, I was going to start a foundation in Kenya that was going to support kids the way I had been supported by Hilda. I didn't expect to hear back from the Swedish embassy, but it must have been several months later I did, and they told me they had located her. Well, I was beside myself with joy. I mean, this is a woman who had been quite central to my life. She had shaped my life quite a bit, and I had never met her. And the thought that I was going to finally meet her was very, very exciting.
So the lifelong strangers, Chris and Hilda, finally met face to face when he invited her to Kenya for an award ceremony for the Hilda Bach Education Fund, the organization Chris started in her name. And when he met Hilda for the first time, his idea of who the stranger was changed.
Well, Hilda is a very simple person and down-to-earth and clearly not wealthy. And I've been telling people that for a long time, I thought that Hilda was an extremely wealthy person who was sort of looking for ways to spend her money. And little did I know that she was just an ordinary Swede. She didn't give because she had more than she needed. She gave because she felt that it was the right thing to do. But I also learned later on that she had also been a beneficiary of some, you know, perfect stranger kind of generosity, because she had originally been a German Jew and had fled to Sweden and had been helped by some Swedish people.
And since that first meeting, Chris and Hilda have kept in touch.
Well, it's a very special relationship because, you know, we've become very, very close. And I keep telling people she's become like my second mother. I jokingly tell her she's my second mother. And my mother actually sometimes jokingly tells me, you know, you're becoming so difficult. I'm going to pack you up and send you to your second mother. So she is, she's a very special person. She's, she and I have, we share a lot of things in common. You know, she had been a survivor of the Holocaust, and I ended up working for the United Nations, investigating genocide and crimes against humanity. And, you know, I ended up working for an organization that had been born out of the ashes of the Holocaust. So it's there are a lot of similarities and things that suggest that it was sort of meant to be.
And how does Hilda Bach feel about having her simple donation turn into an education fund that bears her name?
She is very happy that the foundation is able to support a lot more children than she could have supported herself. And she just believes that this is a ripple effect that her act has had. The Hilda Bach Education Fund has supported many children over the years. It was started in 2001, and this year we have 56 beneficiaries, and next year we are looking to get 200 more children. So you can see the immensity of the work that Hilda started.
So it's interesting that the recipient of a stranger's generosity, Hilda Bach, turned around and helped Chris Mburu, who goes on to help other strangers, which maybe explains Chris's philosophy.
Well, I think it's important to help people who least expect it. And it's important to reach out to people that you do not know, because there's a saying that the stranger of today is the friend of tomorrow. So I've always felt, after meeting Hilda and after the whole Hilda experience, that it's really important to reach out to people and have random acts of generosity, because I think it means a lot to people.
Chris Mburu is a human rights lawyer with the United Nations and the chairman of the Hilda Bach Education Fund. Chris and Hilda's story is recounted in the award-winning documentary, A Small Act. And you can be part of the experience as well by hosting a screening of the documentary in your city or town. We've put up links to the fund and the documentary on our website, cbc.ca/DNTO. Long before he co-founded Wired magazine, Kevin Kelly was a vagabond traveling through India, Southeast Asia, and parts of the United States. It was there that he learned a few things about the kindness of strangers.
There's a certain art to relying on others. You, first of all, have to be very careful who you ask, because that person was going to be inconvenienced even if it was for a few minutes. And so, obviously, you want to try and find someone who looks like they might know the answer. But more importantly, I think you have to find someone who is going to be willing to give an answer. And then thirdly, I think you're trying to find someone that will in some ways feel good about the gift that they're going to be giving you. I was in the Philippines and I basically had to stop at a house, and they actually sent someone out to purchase some canned food, thinking that I guess I would not eat whatever it was that they were eating. And I know that the price of that canned food was you know, a significant dent in their budget. And I felt that I had no really way to repay them for that kind of honor that they had done, or that sacrifice they had done. And I was trying to imagine, you know, if somebody who didn't speak our language kind of arrived at my door, said that they were tired, and you know, we went out and bought them, you know, some banquet somewhere, and said, "Yeah, it's here. We'll go into debt to throw you a banquet." And that's basically what these folks did. I rode my bicycle across America from the West Coast to the East Coast one summer, and somewhere in Indiana, it was late at night and I needed to stop, and I just randomly picked out a lawn, and I had a standard wrap at the time, which was, I'm riding my bicycle across the country, I've already eaten, that was a big thing, and I'm looking for a place to put my tent for the night, and I was never turned down once. And this guy said, sure. And then, of course, once you're out there, they have to invite you in to hear your story. And this guy was really interesting because he had sort of like the ultimate 2,000 decibel speaker room or something. And it was just like not evident. It was kind of like off to the side. So I didn't see it until we got into this conversation, kind of like finding out about it. He sort of knew more about high fidelity, high volume acoustics than anybody in the world. And I thought, oh my gosh, here I am. This is the guru. And there's no other way that I would have ever found him but knocking on the door of a stranger. I finally concluded that every stranger is a potential expert in something that I don't know. And if I can do anything to kind of reach that, I can have a great conversation, because everybody wants to let you know about what it is that they really, really are passionate about.
Kevin Kelly is the senior maverick at Wired magazine and the author of What Technology Wants.
Hi, this is Neil Pasricha, author of The Book of Awesome, and I think one thing that's awesome is when a stranger wishes you happy holidays. There's just all this stress that builds up at the holidays, whether it's planning giant family dinners or complicated travel plans, and that's why it's so nice when, during these sort of roaring, revved-up moments, a complete stranger sort of catches you in the eye and wishes you a sincere, heartfelt happy holidays. It just reminds us that we're all chasing the same thing. I mean, we're looking for love, big hugs, family time, and cozy company right when we need it most. And that's why I think when strangers wishing you happy holidays is a very awesome moment.
This is D'Antio, and I am S-Y-L. And right now, I'm looking at this photograph. It's of a woman. She's leaping through the air. Her arms are stretched out over her head, and her feet are way off the ground. She looks like she's flying. And in front of her, right in her path, is a stranger who looks completely terrified. The photo was taken by artist Lily McElroy, and she has a stack of photos just like this one. She goes out into bars, sets up her camera, and then she asks strange men if she can literally throw herself at them.
I think it takes people a minute to realize what the word literally means. They have to absorb the shock of the question. So, yeah, uncomfortable laughter is generally the reaction. So difficult to meet new people and form these ties and form relationships. So I wanted to do work that kind of explored the pain and humiliation and humor that is kind of inherent in these tries that people go through every day. Just all about finding men who look like they could handle me throwing myself at them, like they could take the impact of, you know, I'm not a small person, so like my body, they needed to be able to absorb the force of my body. I've thrown myself, literally, really important to use the literal, at like maybe 100, 150 men for this project. There's a lot of men who look scared. I have one guy who's crouching with his mouth open, and he looks like he's screaming. He looks absolutely terrified. And then I have ones who just kind of look eyes closed. There's a lot of eyes closed. There's a certain level of anxiety in it, because I am, you know, I'm approaching strangers, I'm making myself a little bit vulnerable, but, you know, in the end, it's really fun to go to a bar and do something that kind of disrupts the expected behavior. It has a lot to do with, I think, this kind of leap of faith that you kind of engage with when you're trying to make a connection with someone. And I think especially romantic connections have that that leap of faith quality, because there's so much possibility for both success and failure. And that's kind of what I really like about that leap, that I'm getting caught midair, so there's never any answer to whether or not this was successful or not successful, whether or not these people catch me, or whether or not I just kind of like fall flat on my face after the leap is over. So I like that there's this kind of ambiguous possibility, which I think is true for any sort of attempt at making a connection with someone. I think a perfect stranger is strangely perfect when you kind of get to exchange this like really small but kind of maybe important moment.
Lily McElroy is a photographer living in New York City. Check out her photo series, I Throw Myself at Men, by heading to our website, cbc.ca/DNTO, where we have links to her website, where you can see the hilarious and extremely awkward, yet strangely moving photos of Lily throwing herself into the arms of strange men. You're listening to the DNTO podcast, where we are asking, when is a perfect stranger strangely perfect? For the last word on that, let's turn it over to Karma Jolie.
So it was about 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. I was on the streetcar on Girard going east, and I was coming up to my stop. And as I was pushing the door to leave, everything went really bright. This is what happens when I'm going to have a seizure. The whole world just suddenly gets this glow. And I was like, uh-oh, it's happening. But I was already stepping down off the streetcar, and I couldn't stop myself mid-step. Next thing I know, I'm coming to in the back of an ambulance. And the paramedic informs me that we're heading to St. Michael's. And I had no idea what had happened. You know, I tried to piece together what I could from the paramedic. And she said that somebody found me on the ground and called 911. She was kind of laughing because she was looking at my healthcare card, which says my age, which is 38. She's like, the person that called 911 told me that you were about 20. So that was one of the benefits of this experience. I now know that I look about 18 years younger than I am, at least when I'm splayed out on the ground. But it still remains a question for me. You know, who took care of me in that moment? Who saw me fall to the ground? Who decided to call 911? Who came and actually looked at my face and even determined that I was 20 years old? I'll never know. But, you know, my glasses were nicely placed in my backpack. There was a white handkerchief that I still have to this day that is not my handkerchief. Whoever came to my rescue used that somehow to help wipe my face. And then it got into my backpack in the rush of loading me into the ambulance. I'll never know who that person is, but I am very grateful. The fact that there were strangers that came to my aid is so comforting. It makes me hopeful that our world actually, despite all the bad news that we're surrounded with every single day, is essentially a place of caring people that are going to reach out and help another person when they're in a desperate place. I don't know who that person is. I don't know to whom that handkerchief belongs. But if you are listening to the radio right now, I'd love to hear from you. I would love for you to get in touch.
You heard her. If you're the stranger who helped Karma out on the streetcar in Toronto that day, get in touch with us. She still has that white hanky, and she'd love to return it to you. And that, my pod pals and dearest strangers, is it for this week's podcast of Definitely Not the Opera. If you have any comments on the show or a story of your own to share, don't be a stranger. Email dnto@cbc.ca, or better yet, give us a ring, 1-866-630-3686. That's our toll-free number. And don't forget, you can always hear us on the good old radio twice a week, Your DNTO, which blends our best stories with your best stories every Tuesday at 2 p.m. on CBC Radio 1, and regular scented DNTO, which airs Saturday at 2 p.m. The podcast is brought to you this week by a gang of people who were strangers until they weren't. Sarah Tate, Josh Schmidt, Anna Lazowski, Tori Allen, and Claire Lawler. Iris Uday is our executive producer. I'm Sukhyun Lee, and I couldn't be any stranger if I tried. Talk to you again in a week.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.